Hare Krishna.
So welcome to Lord Balaram's appearance day here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Always a special occasion. Always a special occasion. And always really highly attended. So you are in good company. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 20. It's the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this section is all about really opening up the purpose for which this book has come into being. Translation. Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. Purport. The doctrines of anthropomorphism and zoomorphism are never applicable to Sri Krishna or the personality of Godhead. The theory that a man becomes God by dint of penance and austerities is very much rampant nowadays, especially in India. Since Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were detected by the sages and saints to be the personality of Godhead as indicated in revealed scriptures, many unscrupulous men have created their own incarnations. This process of concocting an incarnation of God has become an ordinary business, especially in Bengal. Brahma says here, especially in Bengal. Any popular personality with a few traits of mystic powers will display some feat of jugglery and easily become an incarnation of Godhead by popular vote. Lord Sri Krishna was not that type of incarnation. He was actually the personality of Godhead from the very beginning of his appearance. He appeared before his so-called mother as four-armed Vishnu. Then at the request of the mother, he became like a human child and at once left her for another devotee at Gokula, where he was accepted as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata. Similarly, Sri Baladev, the counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna, was also considered a human child born of another wife of Sri Vasudev. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his birth and deeds are transcendental, and that anyone who is so fortunate as to know the transcendental nature of his birth and deeds will at once become liberated and eligible to return to the kingdom of God. So knowledge of the transcendental nature of the birth and deeds of Lord Sri Krishna is sufficient for liberation. In the Bhagavatam, the transcendental nature of the Lord is described in 9 cantos, and in the 10th canto, his specific pastimes are taken up. All this becomes known as one's reading of this literature progresses. It is important to note here, however, that the Lord exhibited his divinity even from the lap of his mother, that his deeds are all superhuman. He lifted Govardhan Hill at the age of 7. And that all these acts definitely prove him to be actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, due to his mystic covering, he was always accepted as an ordinary human child by his so-called father and mother and other relatives. Whenever some Herculean task was performed by him, the father and mother took it otherwise, and they remained satisfied with unflinching filial love for their son. As such, the sages of Naimisharanya describe him as apparently resembling a human being, but actually he is the supreme, almighty personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki Oma Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Miritam Jaina Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. Hands up if you found yourself during the reading of this purport thinking, I know this. I know this already. Anyone? Does that thought ever cross our mind? I've heard this purport before. I've read this before. I know Krishna. I know who's Krishna. I know Balaram. Why do I have to read this again? Why didn't Kripa Moya read something from one of the other cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam? Why the first canto? Well, Prabhupada said that everything is there in the first canto. If you fully understand the first canto, only then you can go on to carry on, read the rest of the Bhagavatam. And only when you've read the rest of the Bhagavatam, then you're ready for the 10th canto, in which Krishna's deeds are fully explained. We are very lucky. Srila Prabhupada's name is His Divine Grace. His Divine Grace. Have you ever thought what that means? His Divine Grace. It's unusual. You don't see it in the English language very much. His Divine Grace. It means that He's bringing information of God and giving it to mankind without any interruption or any invention or anything on the way. He's not putting His own spin, His own color, anything of that. Just bringing that information. So everything that His Divine Grace says is simply passing through Him, like rainwater passes through a conduit. As the rain falls from the heavens, it falls on the roof, and it rolls down the roof, and it comes down the drain. If you catch it, you will have pure rainwater. So in the same way, His Divine Grace means it's grace. It's something which falls from heaven, pure. So when we read Prabhupada's words, we're reading the words that Krishna himself wants us to read. There was a time when Prabhupada was reading the Krishna book, and he said, oh, this has been dictated to me by Krishna. Krishna tells me what to write. It's quite remarkable. So whatever it is that Krishna wishes us to know about himself, that you will find in the purports of His Divine Grace. Now, if you go forward through to the 11th canto, you'll find an interesting discussion between Lord Krishna, and he's giving the best of the best information, because he's just about to depart. And so he's departing, and he's giving Uddhava. He's chosen Uddhava to be the recipient of this information. And he's giving him more information even than he gave to Arjuna. Arjuna, very brief conversation just before battle. And Uddhava, he's giving him some other information. It doesn't contradict anything that Lord Krishna has said before. It's not a higher revelation. It's the same revelation, but there's a few more details in it. And confidentially, he says to Uddhava, he says, there are many incarnations of God. And then he says, but Krishna and Balaram are the most attractive. Krishna and Balaram are the most famous. And when Prabhupada was considering, we don't know how long he had to consider, but when he was giving us the temple in Vrindavan, the center deities were Krishna and Balaram. And through Prabhupada's grace, he introduces us to the entire spiritual world. So here in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a declaration of the importance of Krishna and Balaram. So on this appearance day, we should remember Balaram all day, and we should pray to Balaram. We pray to Balaram for the strength to understand Krishna. Not only that, but we pray to Balaram for the strength to understand Him. Because by the strength of Balaram, we gain access to Krishna. The great mistake is thinking that we have access to Krishna simply because we know the name and form and some of the deeds of Krishna. But to actually enter into the pastimes of Krishna, which is the passport to the spiritual world, we need to pass through all kinds of security checks. See what we have in our baggage. Are you carrying something? Okay. What have you got in your pockets? Have you got any liquids? What have you got in your pockets? Excuse me, sir, do you have any attachments? Any attachments, please? And there's a big sign saying, pictures of the different attachments that you might have with a big cross through them. Please make sure none of these are in your luggage on the way back to the spiritual world. Otherwise, the security guards will come and, okay, and if they find something, then. So all of these things can be taken away by the spiritual master, and his spiritual master, and his spiritual master, and the grace of Nityananda Prabhu, the original spiritual master, and Lord Balaram, who is none other than Nityananda Prabhu. So it's a long chain. One of the difficulties of coming to Krishna consciousness as a person from the Christian background is that the Christianity is relatively simple. There's God, and there's Jesus, and there's something called the Holy Spirit. That's three. And even that's too much. In Krishna consciousness, you come, and there's Prabhupada, and there's Krishna. That's two. And you think, I understand this. This is really easy. It's easier than Christianity. And then there's Radharani. And then there's Balaram. And then there's Vishnu. And the Chaturvyuha. And the demigods. And the entire parampara of spiritual masters. It gets really complicated. So whose grace am I supposed to be, by whose grace am I supposed to be entering the spiritual world? Everyone. Who should I pray to? Everyone. How much do I have to read in order to understand Krishna consciousness? Everything. It's a big job. It's a big job. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you study one verse every morning, as you do in the ashram, it will take you 30 years. 30 years to go through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you better start reading. Therefore, Prabhupada gave us a shortcut. A shortcut. He was asked, which is the most important? He said, if you read the first canto, everything is there. And they asked him for book distribution, which is the most important books? He said, first canto, second canto, and the first part of the sixth canto, the story of Ajamil, which talks about the power of chanting the holy name of Krishna. If you read these three and distribute these three, be all right. Well, how many books should we learn in order to preach Krishna consciousness? They said, four books. Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So that's four books there, so it starts to starts to expand. But if you read these books, you will know enough to convince the worst, most atheistic person on the planet. And who is that? It's Mr. Manasa. Mr. Mind. Mr. Mind. If you can preach to Mr. Mind, then that is the worst, most atheistic, most anthropomorphic, zoomorphic philosopher that you can catch. Then if we read these four books, will be enough. That will be enough to preach to others. So straight away in this verse, Prabhupada tries to have a go at people who will immediately say, aha, Krishna, this is a very interesting concept of God. Very interesting concept of God. Must be based on the Hindu sentiment, the idea of a great king. Certainly, ladies have had a hand in shaping this concept of God, because ladies have these devotional sentiments for children, particularly. So therefore, Krishna is a child. That's why we see when we go to an Indian temple, it's mostly ladies, and then the men stand at the back. In my studies of Hinduism, this we can understand. And then, of course, that God comes as different animals. This is zoomorphism, taking the qualities of different animals and projecting them on Brahman. Of course, Brahman is God, you see. And then everything else that comes from Brahman. This is an incarnation from Brahman. It's very easy. So very in the beginning, Prabhupada takes this philosopher to task. He says, no. No. And right through the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, no. No, don't think like this. And basically, all the way through the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the way through his preaching career, Prabhupada is trying to, with great success actually, because otherwise how would we be here? I was writing something the other day, and we were saying how many... the Bhagavad Gita was first translated into English in 1715. And there was many hundreds of translations of Bhagavad Gita in English and in different languages. But it was only with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is that people became devotees. That's because Krishna can be found. And it's such a controversial thing for someone to come 50 years ago, this week, next week and the week after, to come to the land of the Americans, the Christians and the Jews, okay, who believe that God's form does not exist, who believe that God cannot have a form, and that if you carve a form of that God, that is a great offense against God. So here's a person who's saying, not only that that's not correct, but the way to get to God is to worship his form and to understand his form and to understand his activities. What a brave move. I said to someone the other day, if Srila Prabhupada was somehow to go in front of a group of businessmen like Dragon's Den or something and say, this is my mission for the West. I've come to give Krishna consciousness, to ask all the Westerners to give up this, give up this, give up this, and take to bowing down to a form of a blue boy accompanied by a white boy. They would have said, okay, that's it. I'm out. Get out. This is a very bad idea. Very bad idea. But from one person sitting and playing the bongo drums and chanting Hare Krishna to 602 temples all over the world, 75,000 initiated devotees, and hundreds of thousands of other worshippers. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing, especially in the Western world. So there's only a couple of reasons why that would. Either people are being paid to believe in Krishna. No. Either they're being offered some inducement, like if you die in Krishna consciousness, you will be given 72 virgins or something like that. Some inducement. No inducement. Third, that it really suits their philosophical tendency. No, it's in conflict with the tendencies of the West. So how is it possible that people can bow down to Krishna? How is it possible that we are all gathered celebrating the incarnation of God as Balaram? Just look at the altar. We've come here today with faith. How is this possible? It's a miracle. It's a miracle. And it's possible only because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One time, they came to Srila Prabhupada and they said, we think that you are brave, Srila Prabhupada. He said, why? Because when the scientists deny the existence of Krishna, you're very confident in speaking to them and arguing with them. He said, yes, it is not a surprising thing. He said, it is like a blind man coming to see me and denying the existence of the sun. Behind his shoulder, I see the sun. And he's speaking to me and telling me that the sun doesn't exist. So this man is coming to me and telling me that there is no such thing as Krishna. And behind him, I see Krishna smiling. He said, it is easy to speak to him and defeat him. So God give us that vision. God give us that vision that we can see Krishna in our day-to-day life. And until that time that we can see Krishna in our day-to-day life, Prabhupada has given us this wonderful path to Krishna. And part of that path is deity worship. Part of that path is reading about the form, nature, beauty, and activities of Krishna. And part of that path is reciting the names of Krishna. These are the gifts of divine grace. So, we have a wonderful task today to say something about Lord Balaram. Radha Govinda, could we turn around that board? Everybody's seen a tube map, right? You've seen a tube map, a London tube map. So I did a London tube map of Vrindavan. And wouldn't it be nice, there we are, wouldn't it be nice if we could just get on at Edgware, okay, go on the Jubilee line, oh, I'm sorry, the Northern line, get on at Stanmore. See, there's always two paths to get to Vrindavan. There's Raghunuga and there's Vaidhi, okay? So Stanmore or Edgware, you get on and you come up in Vrindavan. Wouldn't that be nice? So here's a tube map. And the way we get there is not by going underground, but it's by jumping in to the pastimes of Krishna. Now specifically, there are so many pastimes of Krishna that we would need a map. Can everybody see the map? But we would need a map with so many dots, because every day, the Goswami said, every day Krishna was going on a picnic, and every day he was dispatching a demon. So the Krishna book, with its 90 chapters and certain number of chapters for Vrindavan pastimes, is only the best, only the most interesting Only the things to really capture your mind. You know, the Agasura, Bakasura, Putana, Trinavarta, Denukasura. These are the big ones that we like to talk about because they're different, they're varied, they're different chapters. But every day there was some trouble and every day there was some victory. So let us hear something. So what I've done is highlighted those tube stops that you could get out at, and there would be a pastime of Lord Balaram. Okay, let's read a little bit. So Balaram is the older brother of Krishna. He is whitish. He has two hands and sometimes carries a plow or a club and sometimes both. He is often seen in pictures with Krishna and with the cowherd boys, and he's often depicted wearing a blue dhoti. The beauty of Balaram is described by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of Balaram, whose beauty is enhanced by the earrings touching his cheeks. His face is decorated with tilak made from kasturi, or musk, and his broad chest is decorated with a garland of gunja. His complexion is as white as an autumn cloud. He wears garments of blue color, and his voice is very grave. His arms are very long, touching his thighs, and he has shown his great strength by killing the Pralamba demon. Let me take shelter of this chivalrous Balaram. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Prabhupada says, Sri Baladev is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. He is equal in supremacy to the supreme Godhead, yet wherever Krishna appears, Sri Baladev appears as Krishna's brother, sometimes elder, sometimes younger. That's from 10th canto, 1st chapter, 24th verse. And from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 7. In his Vaibhava Prakash feature, Lord Krishna manifests himself as Balaram. The Balaram feature is as good as Krishna himself, the only difference being that the bodily hue of Krishna is dark and that of Balaram is fair. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Sri Balaram is the servitor Godhead who serves Lord Krishna in all affairs of existence and knowledge. The transcendental abode exists by the energy of Lord Balaram. Krishna's first expansion in a form for pastimes is Balaram. Balaram himself helps in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, and he does the work of creation in four other forms. In all forms, Balaram tastes the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. Krishna, you see, is the supreme personality of Godhead. Everyone else is a servant. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasabha Vritya. And even when the Lord expands as his own brother, the supreme personality of Godhead takes the form of the servant of the Lord. And as he expands, as Sankarshan expands, then he expands into various pastime paraphernalia of the Lord. Thus the temple of the Lord is Baladev, the arti paraphernalia is Baladev, the Sheshanaga is Baladev, and all the different features of offering respect and devotion to the Lord. So Lord Balaram helps Krishna to perform different pastimes within the world. And there are a lot of pastimes of Balaram. There are some pastimes of Krishna where Balaram is absent, but for most of them, he is there. Sometimes Balaram precipitates a pastime. For instance, he told Yashoda that actually Krishna has eaten clay. And this precipitated a pastime. Without that tale-telling, Krishna wouldn't have been brought before his mother, wouldn't have opened his mouth, and mother would not have seen the universal form. So she sees the universal form. We read about her thousands of years later, seeing the universal form. So we remember it, she forgets it. We remember the pastime 5,000 years later, she forgets the pastime 5 seconds later. So who is most forgetful? The most forgetful person is the person who is in love with Krishna. Immediately forgets. Because in order for me to love Krishna as my little boy, he can't possibly be God. Therefore, whatever I've seen within his mouth, this is not something important, something to be forgotten. So Krishna and Balaram stole butter together. This is a favorite pastime. It becomes an icon. Not ISKCON, but becomes an icon. Icon means a religious focus of attention. Someone sent me an article recently about a Greek god called Harpocrates. And Harpocrates is a little boy who has his finger in his mouth and a pot in his, you know, like that. And various commentators have said this is very. But if you compare the icon of Krishna with his finger in his mouth with the butter pot as a baby, you will find too much similarity to be denied. Now, this is a Greek god that people were worshipping. So now, just recently, great confusion. There's great confusion in the archaeological community because we've found an ancient form of Harpocrates that has traces of blue coloring in Greece. Now what are we going to do? Huh? What are all the Greeks and Macedonians going to do? Krishna was there. But you'll find Krishna everywhere. He's not confined to India. Don't think that Krishna is an Indian god, and therefore somehow we have to make a mental adjustment. No. Krishna is everywhere. Now they're finding deities of Krishna in Siberia, in Russia, and in Bangkok, and in so many different places. So the more you dig, the more you find. So dig deeper. Someone gave me a book on philosophy. And the book on philosophy says, this book takes you from the beginnings of philosophy all the way through to Wittgenstein. And I said, okay, very good. So read this book. You'll get some philosophy. I said, all the way from Socrates. I said, what happened to Indian philosophy? No, that's not important. Well, I think you'll find if you dig deeper, you'll find the history of philosophy really does begin not in Greece, not in Europe, but somewhere else. Similarly, they gave the Germans the responsibility of researching the history of Sanskrit language. And where did it come from? Curiously enough, where does Sanskrit come from? It comes from Germany. You see, this is a problem. The problem we have. And somebody in the distant future, we'll talk about Krishna coming to England and, you know, have a whole church based on that. But no, get used to the idea. The only reason we call India the Far East and Arabia the Middle East is because of something that happened in the late 1700s, early 1800s, where the East and West were plotted from Greenwich in London because someone in Greenwich, in London, invented a clock that would not change on long sea journeys. So this perpetuated all over the world, and today we talk about the Middle East problem, or that Krishna is a god in the Far East. No, east of what? East of London? Who cares? London is so important that the whole of the world has to be titled according to London? I don't think so. We have to shift our perspective. Vrindavan is the center of the world, because it is here that the Lord chose to come. Anyway, so they stole butter together. Back in the 1980s, I did something which was probably possibly the hardest thing I've ever done. Well, actually, the hardest thing I've ever done is to sell books in Bradford on a wet Tuesday morning. But this came second best. It was to walk all around Brajamandala with no shoes. Come on, gasp of astonishment. That's good. So with no shoes. Anybody who's done it, you'll know that it's the first week is a killer. But it is 84 kosha. 84 kosha means 128 miles. It takes around about a month, or between the full moon and the full moon. You start off at Vishramghat in Mathura, You make a vow and then you walk and you don't look back and you don't pick up any shoes on the way. And you walk and walk and walk and walk, and it is painful. But as you get pain, the blisters turn to bliss as you go through the month. And you go through all these different places. So it takes a pilgrimage and it reduces it to 28, 29 mini pilgrimages. So each day you're walking towards a holy place and another holy place and another holy place where Krishna or Balaram performed their childhood activities. So we start off, can you see Mathura there? See Mathura? You see the river, the Yamuna is coming down. And you'll see different places there. So in some places it follows chronologically, the childhood pastimes, but Krishna and Balaram, they sort of went to different places. As the demons followed, they moved. Originally there were demons in Nandagram. Can you see Nandagram at the top? And so Nanda and his elder brother Upananda, they decided that we will leave this place and go to Gokula. That is why they were there in Gokula. So the reason I wanted to do it this way is because if it is just recounting the pastimes of Lord Balaram, I think you've heard a few of them before. But I wanted you to go on this journey. So it begins on the full moon day of Kartik, and we go around Mathura, and from Mathura we go to Madhuban. Madhuban was already, it's called the Forest of Honey. It was already a famous place. Already Dhruva Maharaj, he did his meditation there, and Prishnigarbha appeared to him in that forest. Already Ambarish Maharaj was there performing austerities. See? So when you reach Madhuban, that is the first forest. And in that forest, this is also a place where Krishna and Balaram came to bring the cows. Each day they would come out. They looked after calves when they were young, up to the age of 5. Some people say 5, some people say 7. What is it, Gauri? 5 or 7? Some people. Some people say that Krishna only started looking after cows when he went to Nandagram. So anyway, 5 or 7, looking after cows. And they went to these different places. But if you go to the village, you'll reach a place known as Krishna Kund. And this kund was made by Krishna pressing his flute into the earth. There's a couple of places where he did this. And he brought his cows here. And there is a deity of Balaram there. And Balaram is... it's very nice to see a deity of Balaram. Often in Vrindavan, you'll find the deity celebrated, or carved if you like, installed, according to the pastime that took place there. So in some place you'll find Krishna with his parents in Gokula. Now often, all over the world, practically speaking, Srila Prabhupada installed Radha Shamsunda, Radha Govinda, Radha Damodar, Radha Gopinath, Radha Gokulananda, Radha Landanishwar. But all over Vrindavan, you'll find Krishna with his mother and father, Krishna with his brother, or Balaram without Krishna, if it's a Balaram pastime place. So in this way, each deity is the very emblem of the pastime that took place there. So you can be very much in the mood of worshipping the Lord. And it's very interesting that all these years later, it's very easy to remember the pastimes, having remembered basically the pain I was in when I reached that holy place. So then we go from, can you see Madhuban? And there's another dot down the road, and that's Talavan. And of course, there's a very famous children's song. We teach it to all our Gurukul children. I'm going to ask all the grown-ups to sing it with me, please, because we need to focus our attention. It goes like this. In the forest of Talavan, Lord Krishna and Balaram killed the Dhenukasura by whirling him around. Get in touch with your inner child. In the forest of Lord Krishna and killed the by Okay, now you have to do the movements, okay? Okay? Get in touch. It's good. It's good. We're talking about a boy, a little child that was looking after cows, okay? In the forest of Lord Krishna and killed the Danu. Cut. Get ready. Bye. Okay, this is Srimad Bhagavatam. This is meant for philosophical penetrations of the intellect. This is meant for the highest thing. When I whirl the demon around, you have to whirl the demon. Kill the Danu Kasura by around and around. In the forest of Talavan, Lord Krishna and Balaram. Kill the Danu Kasura by whirling him around and around. There you go. Don't say you don't learn anything in Srimad Bhagavatam class. Unfortunately, when you go to the forest of Talavan now, you know how many trees there are? You know how many tal trees? Tal is a date tree, right? Type of date. And the boys wanted these dates, and there was a demon, donkey demon, preventing them. But there is, sadly, only one tree left, and that is in the compound of the temple. So if you like, if you feel ecologically minded and you want to restore all 12 forests of Vrindavan, you might as well start with the forest of Talavan that we all sing about and go there and just plant some trees. Plant some trees. Okay. So here we have. Dear Balaram, you are very powerful. Your arms are very strong. Dear Krishna, you are very expert in killing all kinds of disturbing demons. Will you kindly note that just near this place there is a big forest of the name Talavan? This forest is full of palm trees, and all the trees are filled with fruits. Some have fallen down, and some are very ripe, even in the trees. It is a very nice place, but because of a great demon, Danukasura, it is very difficult to go there. No one can reach the trees to collect the fruits. Dear Krishna and Balaram, this demon is present there in the form of an ass, and he is surrounded by similar demon friends who have assumed the same shape. All of them are very strong, so it is very difficult to approach this place. Dear brothers, you are the only ones that can kill these demons. Other than you, no one can go there for fear of being killed. Not even animals go there, and no birds are living there. They've all left. One can only appreciate the sweet aroma that is coming from that place. It appears that up until now, no one has tasted the sweet fruits there, either on the tree or on the ground. Dear Krishna, to tell you frankly, we are very attracted by this sweet aroma. Dear Balaram, if you like, let us all go there and enjoy these fruits. The aroma of the fruits is now spread everywhere. Can't you smell it from here? When Balaram and Krishna were thus petitioned, they were inclined to please their friends. And with smiling faces, they proceeded toward the forest, surrounded by all of them. Immediately upon entering the Talavan, Balaram began to yank the trees with his arms, exhibiting the strength of an elephant. Because of all this jerking, all the ripe fruits fell down on the ground. Thum, 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 thum. Okay. Upon hearing the sound of the falling fruits, the demon Danukasura, who was living there in the form of an ass, approached. That's donkey. Donkey. Approached with great force, shaking the whole field so that all the trees moved as if there were an earthquake. The demon appeared before Balaram and kicked his chest with his hind legs. Now, if you were Gurukul students, I would ask you, children, can you make the sound of a donkey? But because you're adults, I won't. The demon appeared before Balaram and kicked his chest with his hind legs. At first, Balaram did not say anything. But with great anger, the demon kicked him again, more vehemently. This time, immediately, Balaram caught hold of the legs of the ass with one hand and, wheeling him around, threw him into the treetops. Balaram ki! While he was being wheeled around by Balaram, the demon lost his life. Okay. If you're preaching to someone who runs a donkey sanctuary, this may not be the best story to start off with. Okay, and if you're listening and you love donkeys, I'm sorry. But it happened. So the demon lost his life. He threw the demon into the biggest palm tree about, and the demon's body was so heavy that the palm tree fell upon other trees, and several fell down. It appeared as if a great hurricane was passing through the forest, and all the trees were falling down, one after another. This exhibition of extraordinary strength is not astonishing, because Balaram is the personality of Godhead, known as Ananta Shesha Naga, who is holding all the planets on the hoods of his millions of heads. He maintains the whole cosmic manifestation, exactly as the horizontal and vertical, horizontal and vertical threads hold the weaving of a cloth. So if you have a dhoti on, if you have a sari on, take the edge and please now look at it. Please now look at it. Come on, it's a meditation. If you see the strings going one way and the strings going the other way, one is called the warp and one is called the whoop, the woof, the weft. What is it? The warp and the... Warp and the weft. Okay. Cloth is simply the cross-hatched strings. So you're looking at nothing but strings arranged in a certain way. In the same way, this whole material world is nothing but strings which go this way and strings which go that way. It's all created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So for that personality of Godhead, wheeling a donkey around and knocking over some trees like some skittles is not very difficult. Lord Balaram ki jai. We go on, and in the Taliban forest, showing here, we'll see a black deity of Balaram. Now, I thought the Shastra says that Balaram is whitish, but here's a black deity. Well, Krishna is blackish, but here's the white Krishna. How is that possible? If you're going to make a deity of Krishna, why not black? Because the deity of Krishna is formed according to locally available materials. So in Bengal, for instance, where there's no marble, deities are made of? They're made of neem wood. In South India, where everything is granite, all the deities are black. Sometimes devotees don't understand. Oh, they've got it wrong. They've all got it wrong. Well, here, right in Vrindavan, you find a deity of Krishna, deity Balaram, who is black. He's got his right hand raised in blessing. He's 3.5 feet high. And the temple is by the side of Sankarshan Kund. By the side of Balaram is his wife, named Revati. That's right. And there's a festival there. These festivals in these places, they go on and on and on. What is it about Krishna festivals that they just go on and on and on? They don't stop. When I was in Taliban, there was a festival, and it always happens at night. You know, it's like our devotees. They always want to know, what time's the feast? Okay, what time's the feast? Okay, where's the toilets and what time's the feast? Oh, you haven't been here for a while. Welcome back. So, what time's the feast? Well, I'll tell you what time the feast is in the forest of Taliban. The feast is about 4 o'clock in the morning. Because the festival begins 10 or 11 o'clock at night. So one time we were parked up in the forest of Taliban. There was a festival going on. We couldn't get any sleep at all. So 1 o'clock in the morning I was there watching a play. And it's a play of Krishna and Balaram. And there was about 2,500 people there, no exaggeration. 2,500 people, 1 o'clock in the morning, watching a play of Krishna and Balaram. It's amazing. And of course, me, I was thinking, nice play, shame about your timing. But it's the best time. And there was a lot of inside jokes, and the audience were just erupting in laughter and slapping their thighs and poking me in the ribs, saying, did you see that? You see what Balaram did there? I said, yeah, I saw, yeah. What was so funny? They were getting all the jokes. I was getting none of them. And we move along. We move along. Just back a bit, and there's a place called Dauji. There's a place called Dauji. And Dauji is the name of the elder brother. So Balaram is the elder brother. And as you walk towards the temple, there's another song that you sing. Of course, Lokanath Maharaj, he knows all these songs. He was getting us to sing all these songs. You know them? Krishna Kanaya, Dauji Kabaya. Dauji is the elder brother. Krishna is the little child, Dauji is the other. Krishna Kanaya? Dauji Kabaya? Okay. If you were there, it kind of, you know, and if you've done it about 100 times, then it, you enjoy it. So walking towards Dauji. Now, the important thing about Dauji is that he's the biggest deity of Balaram in Vrindavan. He's 6.5 feet tall. 6.5 feet tall, and he's black, and he's also, his hand is Abhay Mudra, and he's also got a cup in his hand, and inside the cup, the pujari will pour Varuni, or honey. They pour honey. So when you go to see this deity, you also bring sweetness. See? And the Mahaprasadam is very drippy. Get ready for drippy Mahaprasadam. You know how when you go and get Mahaprasadam, everybody likes the cake and the sweet and everything solid first, okay? And there's always something sort of goopy at the end of it, okay? Like 4 o'clock offering here, it's sort of blancmange. And it always is, I always feel sorry for that blancmange because it's always very lonely. It's always sitting by itself in the Mahaprasadam container, because no one really wants the 4 o'clock blancmange. So in this temple, get ready for runny prasad. But also, they offer sugar candy lozenges. The lozenges, they're like crystals, sugar crystals. And you have to pass through an avenue before the temple, and on each side of the avenue are people selling mountains of sugar crystals, like this, huge mountain of sugar crystals. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he uses the sugar crystal as an example. He says that when you begin Krishna consciousness, it's like planting the seed of a sugar cane. So sugar cane seed is the very beginning of your Krishna consciousness. Then the plant begins to grow, you feel some affection for Krishna, this is sugar cane. You get some rasa, some real taste, this is sugar cane juice, and that becomes purified until you get gaur. That becomes purified until you get the sugar lozenges. So this is the sweetness. So you can do a philosophical metaphor, theological metaphor as you're walking towards Dauji, if you're so inclined. So there's the blackness and the whiteness, unfortunately. Flies are also attracted to these mountains of sugar cane. But anyway, you take the sugar cane in to see the Lord, and it is like Tirupati inside. If you've been to Tirupati, you know that the last is a beautiful temple on a hill, and it is, the story is that the Lord himself came and became the deity and therefore is very popular. And on any one day, what is it, 40,000, 50,000 people want to go and see, take darshan? We think it's crowded here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. It's crowded in Tirupati. And you're queuing, the queue lasts for 6 hours. And for the last hour and a half, you're being squashed by people. But as you go along, sometimes you're lifted up and you just, it's just a river of human beings flowing towards the Lord. And as they're going towards the Lord, everybody begins shouting, they go, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And you hear this for the last hour and you're just being pushed. And finally, you get dropped in front of the deity and you can see the Lord for about 2 seconds. I waited 6 hours for 2 second darshan, yes. So inside Dauji is very much like that. So don't think that, you know, oh, I'm a proper disciple, I should, you know, they should let me go to the front. Nathji is like that, and, you know, many places are like that. There's no consideration of caste, creed, and believe me, nobody cares who you're initiated by. You see, because ultimately, Balaram doesn't care who you're initiated by. Really. There's no hierarchy. In the spiritual world, hierarchies, they just fall to the side. Are you getting it? Are you getting the message? Are you developing devotion for the Lord? That's the main thing. So everybody's pushing and shoving. Somebody puts their elbow in your arm and, you know, as you go. But it's a wonderful experience. He has very big eyes. Very big eyes. And this deity was placed there by Lord Krishna's grandson, Vajranabha. Vajranabha is Krishna's grandson, who went all over the place of Krishna's pastimes, installing the deities there and trying to get the pastime right and making sure that it was in the right place. And this is the last original Vajranab installed deity from those days. That was 4,900 years ago. 4,900 years ago, that deity was placed there, been there ever since. So that is why he's so popular. So near the temple is a kund, a big lake that they created after the deity was there. And they brought the milk of 100,000 cows. They milked 100,000 cows and they brought the milk. And therefore, this kund, or lake, is known as the lake of the ocean of milk. The Shira Sagar Kund. And this was all an offering to Balaram. Sometimes the immense proportions of offerings are staggering in these places. Tons of flowers or gallons of ghee. And in this case, 100,000 cows were milked to fill a lake as an offering to Lord Balaram. So what would happen is that the lake was filled and the Utsav Murti, the small Murti, usually found at the base of the big Murti, would be brought out to have darshan and to have an offering of this milk. Anyway, this lake is still there. You can go there. And around the times of what Vaishnavas politely call the Troubles, in the 1500s, when deities had to be moved from Vrindavan, we find that this deity, 6.5 feet, was also moved. But there was one person, Gusain Gokulnath, who had a dream. And he had a dream that the Lord was actually under the water in this lake. And so the Lord was rediscovered and reinstalled. So Balaram is the son of Rohini. Rohini. That's why he's called the Bliss of Rohini, or Rohini Nandan. And Rohini was one of Vasudeva's 16 wives. 16 wives. And she was taking shelter when Vasudeva and Devaki were in prison. She was taking shelter in Gokula. Can you see Gokula there? And you see Dauji? And that is in the forest of Mahavan. Mahavan, or the great forest. Now, we sang the name of Mahavan this morning in the prayer. That's its location. We sang also Gokula. We also sang Ramagata. So can you see Ramagat? Ramagat is right at the top there. This is the whole of Vrindavan. So the Lord was born in the south, and then he stayed for 2 months after he left Mathura for Dwarka. He came back to visit the residents of Vrindavan. Everybody had grown up. All the gopis had grown up, all the elders got a lot older, everything had changed, but everything had stayed the same because their love for him was the same. So he embraced everyone when he came back. So we sing about those. So if you go to Nanda Maharaj's house today, it's called Chaurasi Kumbha, or the place of 84 pillars. And these pillars are exquisite. If you go to Vrindavan, don't just stay in the Krishna Balaram guest house or go to the usual places. Please go to these places. There's a new Gokula. Don't go there. Okay? If you go to new Gokula and they know that you're a Patel from England, hang on to your identity and your wallet. But you go to old Gokula. You ask for Purana Gokula or Chaurasi Kumbha. And there you will see the place where Mother Yashoda tied Lord Krishna to the wooden grinding mortar. There you will see where Nanda Maharaj lived. And these Chaurasi Kumbhas, these 84 pillars, are quite astonishing in their degree of carving. If you're an architecture buff, you can enjoy yourself there as well as being in the place where the Lord performed his pastime. So this is Nanda Maharaj's place. They didn't always live there, of course. They used to live in this place. Can you see N at the top there? You'll see an N or Nanda, Nand. It says Nanda. This is called Nandagram. There are three hills in this area of Vrindavan. There is a hill where Radharani was living, which is known as There is a hill which Krishna lifted, known as, and there is a hill where Nanda Maharaj and his father, whose name was Parjanya, they were living, and this is known as Nandagram. So there's three main hills. So when you're the foster son of someone, there's no difference between being the son in terms of affection. So anyway, Nanda and Upananda, his brother, and Parajanya, they moved from Nandagram, because there was too much problem there, down to Gokul. Now, who did Nanda Maharaj pray to protect him and to protect his son Krishna from demons? Lord Nrisimhadev, actually. And if you go to Nandagram today, you'll be able to see the Nrisimhadev deity that Nanda Maharaj prayed to. He's there. So he moved from Nandagram, moved to Gokula, then Gokula became problematic, and he moved back to Nandagram. This is how the family moved. This is Balaram's trek. And eventually, it was from here that Krishna and Balaram were taken by their uncle Akrura, who was sent by King Kamsa. So he came for them when they were 11 years old. Of course, up to this time, we have a beautiful. We should say, how long have we got? 10 minutes more? 10 minutes more? I don't know. I heard there's no Abhishek, so I have to be careful not to stretch your charity with me. Okay. That was an arbitrary figure, wasn't it? Yeah, arbitrary figure. Okay. Okay, 10 past 10. Okay. I can keep going, but can you keep going? Is it all right so far? So, I just want to say something, because this demon, his name is Pralamba, and Pralamba means one who separates. So, in Bhaktivinoda's description of Pralamba Asura, he says, this is the one that separates you from the devotee community. He takes Pralamba as being symbolic. So someone, the voice of someone, the actions of someone who separates you from the devotee community, separates you from chanting, separates you from your faith in Krishna, he's symbolic of Pralamba Asura. Because once, while the boys were engaged in their transcendental pastimes, a great demon of the name Pralamba Asura entered their company, desiring to kidnap Balaram and Krishna. Although Krishna was playing the part of a cowherd boy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could understand everything, past, present, and future. So when Pralamba Asura entered their company, Krishna began to think how to kill the demon. But externally, he received him as a friend. "Oh, my dear friend," he said, "it is very good that you have come to take part in our pastimes." Krishna then called all his friends and ordered them, "Now, my friends, we shall play in pairs. We shall challenge one another in pairs." With this proposal, all the boys assembled together. Some of them took the side of Krishna, and some of them took the side of Balaram, and they arranged to play in duel. The defeated members in duel fighting had to carry the victorious members on their backs, as a horse carries its master. So if you lost the fight, you had to carry the person who beat you on your shoulders. They began playing, and at the same time tended the cows, as they proceeded through the Bandiravan forest. So the Bandiravan forest is extremely important for us. Very important place. Jiva Goswami likes this place. Can you see Bandiravan there? Out on the extreme sort of, what is it, the right-hand side? Bandiravan. So remember that name. We'll be coming back to Bandiravan. Or Bandiravan. The party of Balaram, accompanied by Sri Dama and Vrishabha, came out victorious. And Krishna's party had to carry them on their backs through the Bandiravan forest. Krishna, being defeated, had to carry who? Sridham on his back, and Bhadrasena carried Vrishabha. Imitating their play, Pralambasura, who appeared there as a cowherd boy, carried Balaram on his back. Pralambasura was the greatest of the demons, and he had calculated that Krishna was the most powerful of the boys. Pralambasura carried Balaram far away. The demon was undoubtedly very strong and powerful, but he was carrying Balaram, who is compared to a mountain. Therefore, he began to feel the burden, and thus he assumed his real form. When he appeared in his real feature, he was decorated with a golden helmet and earrings, and looked just like a cloud with lightning carrying the moon. Balaram observed the demon's body expanding up to the limits of the clouds, his eyes dazzling like blazing fire, and his mouth flashing with sharpened teeth. At first, Balaram was surprised by the demon's appearance, and he began to wonder, how is it that all of a sudden this boy has changed in every way? But with a clear mind, he could quickly understand that he was being carried away from his friends by a demon who intended to kill him. And if you do run a sanctuary for Pralambas, you may want to block your ears now. Immediately he struck the head of the demon with his strong fist, just as the king of the heavenly planets strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt. Stricken by the fist of Balaram, the demon fell down dead, just like a snake with a smashed head, and blood poured from his mouth. When the demon fell, he made a tremendous sound, and it sounded as if a great hill were falling upon being struck by the thunderbolt of Indra. All the boys then rushed to the spot. Astonished by the ghastly scene, they began to praise Balaram with the words, "Well done, well done." All of them then embraced Balaram with great affection, thinking that he had returned from death, and they offered their blessings and congratulations. All the demigods in the heavenly planets became very satisfied and showered flowers on the transcendental body of Balaram, and they also offered their blessings and congratulations for his having killed the great demon Pralambasura. Balaram ki! Now, after you kill a demon, I don't know if you've noticed this yourself in your demon-killing activities, but you want to take a bit of a rest. You want to take a bit of a rest. So they were in Bandirabhan, and they went to a special place to take rest. There was a big tree there. And even today, this is a very special place. As you enter this place on the trek, you pass by a temple known as the Temple of Bandi, Anandi, and Manuvanshavi. This is three forms of Durga, and Anandi, Bandi, Anandi, and Manuvanshavi. So Bandi is the form of Durga who sent the Kamsa's soldiers to sleep. Anandi is the Durga who removes the shackles. And Manuvanshavi is the form of Durga who protects the Lord on his way across the river Yamuna. So you enter Bandirabhan and you see that temple. As you come in, Jiva Goswami directs us to understand that even though Krishna's relationship with Radharani is Parakiya Bhava, and we sing that in the song, Krishna also has a Swakiya Bhava with Radharani. And it is in this place, in this Bandirabhan, that Krishna marries Radha. And it is, the ceremony is performed by the greatest wedding priest of all, whose name is Lord Brahma. So he performs the wedding priest. Now, as you come into that grove, you'll see a big spreading tree. And opposite that tree is a temple. Now, in most temples of Krishna and Radharani, Krishna is as he is here, in his Shamsunda form, his Tribhangananda form, just getting ready to perform the Rasalila, playing his flute, Radharani by his side, eager to do service. In this particular temple, and it's the only temple in the world like this, Krishna has his fingers like this. And he's leaning over to Radharani, and he has some kumkum. And he's placing kumkum in her parting. So the only time you'll see this particular place. So this is Bandirabhan. And if you want to, these places are very... there's people there, but for those who don't go to Vrindavan that often because of the, you know, when you get to our temple, it's the center of activity. Wherever devotion to Krishna is being strongly preached, everybody wants to be there. So when I first went to Vrindavan, and certainly when Samanath, Raghunath Prabhu were living there, living there, Vrindavan temple was kind of, you know, out of Vrindavan, you could say. It wasn't in the marketplace. There was nothing around it except the, you know, pathways. And it fitted in very much with our kind of Western idea of the spiritual place being a peaceful place. But now if you tend to not go to Vrindavan because of the huge congestion there is there, it may interest you to know that there's a lot of Vrindavan. It's all over the map here. You know, it runs, Braj Mandal runs all the way from the Taj Mahal in the south, up to Sheshashai in the north, or even beyond that. And anywhere in there is the place where Krishna performed his pastime. So you can go there, find your own forest, and you can be peaceful. Okay? If you want. If that's what you want. If your life is very noisy, and you want to go to Vrindavan and have some peace and quiet, go to Kamyavan, you can go to these different places. Certainly, you should try to go to Ramgat, because Ramgat is peaceful, because it's not connected to anything else. And Lord Balaram went there. Even Balaram chose this spot in Vrindavan to stay for 2 months. You see? And it's a kind of a well-hidden secret. Well, not really. It's on the pilgrimage path. But if you go to Ramgat, you won't be bothered. It's very peaceful. You won't hear any crowds. Okay. So, you know the story when... I was going to tell the story, but I'll skip that. It was when Akrura takes Krishna and Balaram. It's another great icon of Krishna's pastimes. Because if you go around Vrindavan, you will see this picture many, many times. Yes, you'll see Krishna playing his flute. Yes, you'll see Krishna by Radharani. But you'll also see Krishna and Balaram in the chariot being driven by Akrura on the road from Nandagram to Mathura. And this very powerful imagery gives rise to Nanda Maharaj's permanent vipralamba from Krishna and Balaram. How is it possible that Nanda Maharaj could live any more without Krishna and Balaram? It is said that Nanda Maharaj's tears were just flowing every day, non-stop, because of the absence of Krishna. It is said that he stood on the hill, you know, and of course today the pujari will take you to the exact spot where Nanda Maharaj stood on the hill, and you'll still see a long road going off into the distance. So, when Akrura wanted to stop, he stopped, and he went to take a bath in the river, in the Yamuna, and it was there that a remarkable pastime took place, because he saw Krishna and Balaram in the water. But then he saw Lord Vishnu lying on Sheshanaga, and then he became bewildered. How is this possible? How can I see, first of all, the boys that I'm taking to Mathura in the water, and then I'm seeing Sheshanaga and Vishnu lying on him in the water? And he said, this is a very remarkable thing. And of course, then he, and then it, you know, sort of disappears. And then he goes back onto the chariot. So, I don't like fasting. In fact, it's my least favorite thing in the Hare Krishna movement. I like singing. I like chanting. I like deity worship. I like, you know, fire sacrifices. I like reading. Sometimes I like, you know, speaking Krishna consciousness to people. I think there's 2 points in your Krishna, 3 points in your Krishna consciousness. I'm saying because Raghunath is here. First of all, You know everything and you want to speak to everybody about Krishna consciousness and you just can't wait to preach to someone to make them a devotee. Okay? Anyone at that stage yet? Okay, that's the first stage. And then as life goes by, you know, for me, maybe, I don't know, 30 years or something like that, you come to the realization that actually there's nothing that you can say that can make anyone a devotee. And even if someone becomes a devotee, they'll never say thank you to you for having spoken to them the first time they came to the temple or the first time you met them. There's never any gratitude. Krishna takes that all away. Your sense of achievement is all gone. We have, you know, I remember speaking to someone over here. It was a devotee who came, and he was a young man who came, and I was teaching him how to say his pranams to Prabhupada. I was telling him all about who's Krishna and who's on the altar and everything like that. Now this young man has 3,000 disciples. Do you think at any time he's ever written me a letter saying, thank you for being the first person who came at the temple? Isn't there? There's never any gratitude. The point is, if you're looking for gratitude, you'll never get it. It's like it will disappear. It will disappear. So only when you don't want anybody to say thank you, that's when the joy of preaching will come back to you. I'm still waiting for that to come. It may come, if I'm lucky, by the time I'm, you know, 64. Okay. And it just means that you open your mouth and you speak something about Krishna, speak something about Prabhupada, speak something about the process of Krishna consciousness, and you don't care whether the message gets to the mark or not. You're detached. And you may have different competitive views, but I think if you can preach in a detached way, that's when Krishna can use you as an instrument. Because if it's never about you. Never, ever. It will never be about you, and it never was. You're just a drain pipe for the rain of mercy. And a drain pipe, no one glorifies a drain pipe. Okay? No one comes to your house and says, boy, I noticed you got really nice drain pipes. It's like, you know, I notice you got a nice car. You keep your lawn very nicely. I notice you got nice flowers growing. No one ever says anything about the drain pipe. And drain pipes are very important. In our case, the drain pipe is that which brings the rain of heavenly mercy flowing down to reach the lowest point. And the lowest point is the person who knows nothing about Krishna. That's where you are. You're the mouth of the drain pipe. And if you can just give that without any expectation of reward, then you'll do well, my son, my daughter. Because that's, you know, unfortunately, the way of the world. Anyway, being at the very bottom of the drain pipe, but still wanting some pleasure in my Krishna consciousness, I think at some stage that Krishna should be the God who feeds me. I was thinking, this was 88, I think, 87 or something like that. And I was doing this. I was barefooted. It was, you know, you to get to that point, you're sort of three quarters of the way around. My feet were sore. There was thorns, sharp thorns in Vrindavan, you know. And you find yourself thinking, why on earth would the Supreme Personality of Godhead come to a place where there's so many damn thorns? Why didn't Krishna choose a nice place like Goa? We could have done Braj Mandal Parikram in Goa. That would have been a really nice place. Why Vrindavan? It's dry, there's thorn bushes. You know, when we hear the forest of Vrindavan, we just think of, you know, Nottingham Forest or Sherwood Forest or pine trees, you know, mango trees maybe if it's India. But no, you get thorn bushes and it's... Because, unfortunately, people have cut down a lot of the trees because of the popularity of Krishna. People go there and then they destroy whatever forest is left. Anyway, so I'm in the forest of Vrindavan. There's no forest. There's thorns and sharp stones. And I'm thinking, did I make the right decision doing this? Never think that. Never think, did I make the right decision coming to Krishna? It's always the right decision. A friend of mine who used to come here, he was a drummer. I'll tell this little vignette. He was a drummer. Still is a drummer. And back in the 60s, he used to read the New Musical Express. And this was a newspaper that would give advertisements of which bands needed drummers. So he was reading. And he read of a small group just starting out that wanted a drummer. So he went along for the audition. And it just so happened that that week he'd been playing in a club. And the exact song that he'd been drumming for in that club was the song they asked him to play to show how good he was at drumming. So he was all over the place. He was describing it to me. He said, my drums are like this. And he said, really good. You're hired. They phoned him up afterwards. They said, can you come along this week? He said, well, I'm sorry, I can't come for rehearsals because I'm already in a band, in a club. And he said, that band is, you know, I get £5 a night. And back in the 1960s, that was a lot of money. £5. £5 for 4 hours' work. That was a lot, wasn't it, Moksha? A lot of money. Fiver. My God, a fiver. So then, a year later, the same group had changed their name. They'd found another drummer and everything. So the same group had changed their name. They had now called themselves a very unusual name, a bit of a psychedelic name. They were called The Pink Floyd. So Bob, T-shirt Bob, he said to me, you know, Creeper Moya, I have always, always regretted that I said no at a time that I should have said yes. All my life, I've always regretted that. And I think we have to have the same approach to the band that has been given to us. Will you become a singer in Prabhupada's band? And you're lucky because a lot of people said no and you said yes. And at times you will think to yourself, why did I do that? Why did I do that? I could have had a nice life. Why did I join Prabhupada's group? I joined Prabhupada's group. And this happened and that happened. And yes, so many things will happen. But at the end of it, you'll be very, very grateful. Anyway, in 1988, I wasn't grateful. I was thinking, why did I choose to come on the Braj Mandal program? It is so painful. And there was 200 others, and they were about 5 miles ahead. And I was missing breakfast, and I hate missing breakfast. It's my payoff for japa. My dear Lord Krishna, I chant my rounds, you give me breakfast, that's the deal. So anyway, there was no breakfast. So I decided, I'm going to pray to Lord Balaram for breakfast. Now, Lord Balaram is not a waiter, he's not my order supplier, but I was desperate. So I prayed, my dear Lord Balaram, this is your place. This is your place that we're coming into now. We were just before Ramagat. And my feet were hurting, my head was hurting, I was sunburned, I was thirsty, and I was really, really hungry. Because we've been walking since, you know, 3 in the morning. 3 in the morning, and it was 11 o'clock, and I hadn't had breakfast. That's terrible. And it's hot, and the sweat has been... Anyway, so I made this prayer. And it was probably one of the more desperate prayers. And believe me, when you are crushed, when circumstances crush you, that's not the time to give up. That's the time to push through. And that's the time to pray for the strength to continue. So I prayed for the strength. And I came to a little village. Later on, I learned the village was Ramgat. And some kindly ladies saw me. And they started speaking in whatever they speak, Brij Bhasha. You know, and they came up to me and said, I said, Prasad. They said, And they gave me a feast. So here I am in Balaram's village where he spent 2 months. And the ladies are serving me. And all the others, the 200 others, they're way, way ahead. They're having whatever the tractor was able to bring them. I was having, you know, just, you know, drink as much buttermilk as I wanted, and gore, and you know, these green chapatis. They put dhania in it to make green chapatis. Freshly made with hot ghee brushed onto them. Oh, I was eating like a king. So by the time I entered Ramgat, my faith in Balaram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead was fully established. Fully established. I knew there was a God. And I knew he did good breakfasts. So I came to Ramgat. And Ramgat, as you can see, is by the bank of the river. And when you come to the temple there, it's all centers around Lord Balaram's Rasalila. Lord Balaram has a Rasalila, Krishna has a Rasalila. But Lord Balaram took advantage of the company of the old friends that he had, the gopi girls who are now all grown up, to engage in this Rasalila. And so seeing this beautiful pastime, Lord Varuna, he gave the gift of Varuni. And Varuni is the beverage which comes flowing from the tree in the form of a honey. So being slightly intoxicated by the sweetness of this honey drink, Lord Balaram began, he began shouting. Sometimes people do when they're a little intoxicated. He began shouting. And he asked for Yamuna Devi, the personification of the Yamuna River, to come and join the dance. She didn't want to come. So then Balaram took his plow and he began hammering away at the riverbank, pulling, ordering her to come, making great, gouging great channels so that she would have to flow towards him. So today, if you go there, you'll see that Yamuna is flowing, but you'll see the little rivulets on either side. There's a beautiful temple there, and it was there that I first made the connection that Lord Balaram is still being served this honey drink, because inside the temple, Lord Balaram has a honey pot, and it's filled up daily by the brahmanas. Every single day, the honey pot is washed out and filled up with fresh honey. So where'd you get honey from in Vrindavan? Well, they do. They take it. It's a very quiet place, this Ramgat. It's far from, far from the madding crowd, as they say. But then I looked up in a tree. The tree just outside the temple has the largest beehive that you'll ever see. It's from the top of the curtains down to Murari's head. If you can imagine, the whole of that curtain there, that red curtain, is the beehive. And it is throbbing with hundreds of thousands of bees. So the closer you go, you hear the chanting of Vedic mantras. You hear the buzzing of the bees. Okay. So we have... I suppose I should stop there. That is it. That is my time is up. But on this day, because Balaram is the Adi Guru. Adi Guru means he is the person who can make this connection with you to Krishna. So on this day, traditionally, the Vaishnavas during the day, they pray to Lord Balaram, they come before the altar and they pray for spiritual strength. And that means that normally there is something preventing you from taking the next step in your spiritual life. Wherever you are, there's always a next step that you need to take. That step, sometimes you postpone it, sometimes you try to cancel it, but it's often because you fear making the next step, because every time you step forward in spiritual life, there's some fear involved. And the fear is, what will I lose by taking this step? That's the big fear that we have. Very easily we rise to the level we were in our last life, and then we make very slow progress thereafter. So what's the next step for me? I don't know the answer to that. Only you know the answer, and your closest friends. So whatever that next step is for you, there's some fear involved. What if? It's the fear of what if. What if I make the wrong step? What if I make the wrong turn? What if I... this is not the right thing to do. what if the step is the right thing to do, but it's not right for me at this moment in time? What happens if I lose out materially, if I step forward spiritually? What happens if I step forward spiritually, but Krishna doesn't come forward, you know? What happens if I take one step, but Krishna doesn't take 10 steps forward for me? What happens if I'm not advanced enough yet for Krishna to even care about reciprocating with me? Don't think these things. There's always the next step, and that fear involved in taking the next step can be the barrier, or it can be the challenge for you to pray. So we pray for courage. That's the thing, because if you have courage, even if you have some fear, you'll do the right thing anyway. So find your fear, and you've found your prayer. Whatever it is that's holding you back, you pray to Balaram today to kindly, either as you remove Pralambasura, because this fear is keeping me from you. My dear Lord, I don't want to be separate from you anymore. I've had long enough in Krishna consciousness. Long enough. I know enough now. I should be old enough to take this next step. I want to come closer to you. Please tell me what the next... Please give me the courage and remove the obstacles. These two things. Remove the obstacles. Give me the courage to make the next step. Whether or not you reciprocate, whether or not I feel it immediately, I don't mind. I'll leave that up to you. You can crush me, or you can embrace me. Whatever you want. That's the attitude for the best prayer. If we make the best prayer, whatever happens, I don't mind. Whatever happens. So that's the prayer we have today. And this afternoon, gosh, Balaram is extremely kind in this part of the world, because I think we have the feast at what time? 12:30. Well, who's the senior devotees in this place that they bring the feast up so close? So, 12:30. Actually, 12:30 means that we sing, and 1 o'clock, 5 past 1, then the festivities begin. And if you're very, very lucky, Balaram may have been offered some honey. So get ready. All right. Thank you very much. His divine grace, who gave us everything that we need to know, who has revealed the whole of Vrindavan to us, to that person we offer our humble obeisances. And to Lord Balaram, the elder brother of Krishna, we offer our humble obeisances this day for courage and for removal of obstacles. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama.